When I talk to people who have such distinct and tremendous voices, I like to ask when and how that person discovered their voice and when you knew you had something in it that was all your own.
When people start paying me to hear it. To honest to goodness truth, because I've always sung. It was just part of what we did as a family, and I'm an only child, but I grew up with about a bunch of cousins. And we did that for self-entertainment, and it happened in schools, and, you know, as part of school, as a part of church. So, you know, I didn't find my voice to be anything different than anybody else's, because everybody I knew around me, we all sung, and I had no knowledge of what was good or what was bad. I mean, the voice was a voice, as far as I was concerned, growing up.
Well, you got started in life in many ways very early. And I'm very curious about, and I've heard a little bit about some of your earliest experiences, twice being fired for doing what you're known for doing these days and all these years. Can you just briefly elaborate on that? And then I'd be interested in hearing about some of the people who actually did recognize what you had to offer and perhaps served as primary examples for you, personal or professional.
Well, as you said, I did get fired for singing on the job, and which that's why I have a very strong faith, because I didn't realize at the time that I was being guided into something that was going to benefit me in later years for the balance of my life up to now, and that is to sing to support my family. But the first time I was at a restaurant washing dishes. I mean, what in the world could I do to disturb anybody washing dishes, singing to keep myself company from 11 to 7? The same situation happened again in the nightclub where I was a waitress. I got fired for wanting to sing and entertain the folk who I was serving tables to. Fortunately, the club situation is where the person who recognized that I had something special took me to an audition. And from there, the rest became history.
Yeah, absolutely. You started out relatively quickly with a hit record. I'd be interested in hearing about Tommy Ridgely and his role.
He was the one I was singing with. He was the band. He was the live music band at the Club Pimlico where I was waitressing. And I had done it several times, and what happened was the audience, of people who I was waiting tables with, instead of wanting me to wait tables, they preferred my singing. So they started asking for the singing waitress, and I think that kind of rubbed the boss up the wrong way. So, you know, I don't know if he saw some. He didn't see the bottom line success in what I was doing. Evidently, he didn't see the monetary benefits of it, because if he had, he would have left me alone and let me sing. But he didn't. He fired me instead. But Tommy Ridgely saw something in me that I didn't recognize in myself. I was just doing what I enjoyed doing, and that was singing. And I was very comfortable with that. I mean, I had no apprehensions or nervousness about being in front of an audience, never did. Even as a child, I had no nervousness about getting in front of an audience. I guess I was a born ham. But I had no clue. I was, when you say naive, I was very naive at that stage of my life about music and how you could really earn a living. 3 or 4 days later, I was in a recording studio recording. So, you know, all this is happening pretty quick.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So I still had no clue business-wise, you know, what to do or how to go about it, because even though Tommy recognized the vocal side, he didn't understand the fact that I had no clue as to what I should charge to make an appearance or anything like that. So I learned the hard way, by trial and error.
Oh, yeah, as so many people do, sometimes even with good advice.
Yes.
Well, you have been sporting the crown of Soul Queen of New Orleans, and I'm wondering,
1989, became official in 1989. Prior to that, my drummer, who's now deceased, Wilbert Widow, when he started working with me in the band that I put that my husband and I put together back in the late 70s, early 80s, he said he didn't want to introduce me as the singing grandmother, so he gave me the title of the Soul Queen of New Orleans, and that's the way he used to introduce me. But then in 1989, a young man who was working for, I think he was working for the Jazz and Heritage Foundation at that time, decided that it would have been fitting to just give me that title officially. So in that year, in fact, February 17th to be exact, I can remember that because it was the same day my father passed away, so it's going to always be right there for me to remember. They officially gave me the title of the Soul Queen of New Orleans. So officially since 1989, but back in the 70s when my drummer, which his name was Wilbert Widow, that's the way he used to introduce me, and it just became a moniker that stuck.
Yeah, I think rightly so, but with that moniker comes an inherent mix of pressure and privilege, right?
I don't find no pressure in it at all. It's just a title. There's no pressure that comes with it because I'm going to be Irma no matter what the title is.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm not hung up on that. I mean, I appreciate it and I'm very honored with it, but I find no pressure in having it.
Very good. Well, let's talk about this other name of yours, your birth name, and the connection to a hurricane, which just passed through, and having...
Oh, have I been teased? Oh, goodness. Good thing I have a sense of humor.
Well, and I'm sure, you know, teasing and humor aside, you lived through Katrina, one of the most devastating storms to ever hit the states here. And given the fact that we've just gone through back-to-back hurricanes, Harvey and Irma, your namesake, I'm wondering, you know, what were you thinking as first Harvey, then Irma began to make the news? Were there flashbacks? Is there such thing as hurricane PTSD that you
I haven't had any so-called flashbacks, but the memories will always be there. I guess I can say that I was fortunate in one way and not so fortunate in another. I left town the Friday, the weekend of Katrina. I had the one and only job in August of that month, booked in Austin, Texas. So I did not experience the actual flooding per se in New Orleans. I was somewhere else when the flooding happened. And I thank my God today many times over that I was not here because I probably would have either drowned or been sitting on the top of the roof. Some of my family members who follow whatever I do, they do whatever Mom does. They will say, if Mama say, I'm going to say too. I'm glad I wasn't here because I probably would have caused the death of family members that, you know, by being stubborn and not leaving because we never left New Orleans in terms of when a storm came through. We would just hunker down and ride it out. So I feel very blessed in that I was not here. I got the news while in Austin, Texas, while we were doing the actual gig. When we went on break, the young man who was listening to the weather report while handling the sounding for the show, he let us know that the airports were closed and we couldn't get back to the city because the airports were being closed. But the flooding didn't come till after Katrina had left. I mean, the storm was over and was headed somewhere else, and then the levees breached at a point at the 17th Street Canal. The levees breached early that morning, which that's why a lot of folks lost their lives, because people had gone to bed and was comfortable relaxing after the storm had passed, so they went back to bed and was asleep. So a lot of them got caught, you know, off guard. And my brother-in-law was one of them who got caught. He said he heard this slushing around. He woke up, and when he woke up, the water was up level with his bed. And he had to swim from his apartment to a bridge to get out of the water. So a lot of folk got caught off guard, and I was blessed in one way. I guess I say it's a mixed blessing because I was not in the city at the time the levees breached. I woke up at the hotel since we couldn't get back to the city. I woke up at the hotel watching the news, which was CNN, and they were talking about the levees breach, and they were showing the homes and how much water, how high the water was. And I actually saw the roof of my home, which is a very unsettling situation to look at. And it's like you have all these emotions running through you, like, okay, what are we going to do? How we, you know, what's going to happen at this point? But I never gave up on coming back home because I figured the water wasn't going to stay there. That much I had faith in.
Wow. Yeah, so much loss. I have friends in New Orleans, and, you know, it was devastating.
Yeah, you don't realize the magnitude of your loss until you start looking for things you thought you had or you knew you had prior to the storm. And here it is, what, 11, 12 years later, and I still find myself looking for items that I had prior to the storm, prior to the flood. And that's how you relate to it. I never did get into a situation where I felt hopeless. I never got to that point. I shed my tears. I got beyond it. I prayed on it, which most of us who have faith do. And I got the strength that I needed to do what I needed to do, and that's how I handled it.
Yeah.
And still handles it, because when storms come, there's nothing you can do about the weather. There's absolutely nothing you can do about the weather. That's the first thing I advise people to do. You can't change the weather, so all you have to do is get the strength to deal with whatever is going to happen. Figure out how you're going to handle what it is that's happening to you at that point and move forward if you can.
Yeah. Well, you're an example of that, certainly, when I think about the album that you put out shortly after Katrina, After the Rain, an album that earned you a Grammy.
And you know the irony of it? Every last one of those songs had been selected prior to the storm.
Wow.
Every last one of them. The only one that was a last-minute afterthought was Shelter in the Rain. And that's the one that I'm doing with just the piano and myself. But all the other songs were pre-selected prior to the storm. In fact, we were the recording session date had been set for September, which, of course, didn't come off until, what, I think, October or November of that year, something like that. And it's kind of foggy right now as to what day it actually happened. But, yeah, and it didn't happen in New Orleans. We had to do it in Milton, Louisiana, which is outside of Lafayette. But all those songs, with that one exception, was pre-selected.
Wow, that is amazing. For anyone not familiar with the album, you know, titles like Stone Survivor, Another Man Done Gone, tunes that, you know, I count the tears.
It became all of the musicians who participated on that particular CD. It was our therapy when we were in the recording studio. We all felt connected to each other and connected to the music, because it really did help us get through what we were going through at that time. So it was our therapeutic recording session.
Well, congratulations on all the accolades on that, and certainly all the accolades and credits you've earned over these many years. You're currently touring with an amazing cast of characters right now, fellow legendary vocalists, the Blind Boys of Alabama, and backed by the Preservation Hall Legacy Quintet. Can you tell me how this came about, and give us a hint at what fans can expect from this lineup during your October 18th concert in Oklahoma City?
Well, to be honest with you, we haven't had the first rehearsal as of this interview.
Really?
So I couldn't answer that honestly for you. I really don't know. But I am one of those old school singers. If it don't work, I will find a way to make it work. I will sing those songs that I feel my audience would appreciate in me doing. And push come to shove, I'll sing a cappella. I don't have a problem with that. And hopefully, the accept this old broad and doing her thing. I'm 76, going on 77, hopefully. I'll make it in February. And I'm going to have fun. I'm going to really enjoy the set and take it for what it's worth. And I hope the audience who come out to see us take it in that mindset that we're up there having a good time, doing the best we can under the circumstances. Because I don't think any of us, including Five Blind Boys, are 20 anymore. So
yeah.
We will be up there doing what we love to do at the ages that we are and enjoying life.
Absolutely. And I think you guys have earned that spotlight all these years, and may it continue to shine on you.
Thank you so very much. Hello?
Hello, is this Irma?
Yes, it's me. I got it, honey.
Okay, all right.
How you doing?
Well, I am great. How are you?
Oh, it's trying to catch up on some things we need to get done before heading back out again.
I understand. Well, I sure appreciate you allowing a follow-up here because, you know, when last we talked, you had yet to actually rehearse.
Right.
And so I'm curious how that's been going and what are your thoughts as you look forward to this tour?
Well, as it started out, as I told you, I had not seen the guys, but as it turned out, I work with most of the guys that are in the Legacy Band. And, of course, the Blind Boys of Alabama are good. They've been at it a long time, so they know what they're doing. And the show has been going relatively well.
Thrilled to hear that.
Well, it has to get better because we've been singing the same songs every night. September the 29th, so we know what we're doing by now.
What is your favorite thing about the road, and what's your least favorite thing about the road?
Traveling.
both favorite and least favorite?
Well, when you do what you got to do to work, so that's how that goes. You know, you don't really decide on what's a favorite and what's not a favorite. You do what you have to do to work, and part of working in this business is traveling. And we're doing a bus tour, and so that can be pretty hectic sometimes, but it's part of what you do. So you don't look at it either negatively or non-negatively. It is what you do if you want to get the job done.
Right on. Well, very good. And one last question. Have you played Oklahoma before or that you can recall?
There's a bunch of cities I've played this time that I had never played before.
Really?
Yes. I've never been to Phoenix, Arizona. I had never been to Midland, Texas. Where else I had not been? Heck, that was quite a few of them. But a lot of the folk who we've been performing to are folk who've been to Jazz and Heritage Festival, so I'm not surprised in that respect.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, I hope Oklahoma is as receptive as I think it's going to be, and excited to see you, as excited as I am.
Well, thank you.
And safe travels on the road, and we'll look forward to seeing you when you get here.
Okay, love. Thank you very much for calling back.
Well, thank you, Irma.
You're welcome.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.